Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Because the night belongs to lovers. Because the night has freaky Iranian guys shouting and screaming and shooting people. Oh my God, scream if you want to go faster. It's into the night. We do want to go faster. Okay. Well, hello, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard. With me is Abby and Anthony. Let's go. Podcast
Yeah.
time. I'm out. I'm done. Ooh, too fast.
Tap out.
So yeah, it's too back to normal. Yeah, so you're listening to Spoilerfilled Film Conversation. We're here to chat about a film. That film is Into the Night. Abby, you picked it, so clarify the details because it is a sort of ambiguous sentence without any context.
Into the Night is from 1985. It was written by Ron Coslow, directed by John Landis, stars Jeff Goldblum, Michelle Pfeiffer, Richard Farnsworth, Irene Papas, and Catherine Lloyd. It's about a man who can't sleep. Mostly. There's also some diamond smuggling. No, sorry, emerald smuggling.
Yeah, so the blanket insomnia covers the plot, does it? Fine. That's fine. Man with insomnia may get into some scrapes.
Well, his story is, from his point of view, everything is just stopping him from sleeping. And then from her point of view, almost everyone is trying to kill her.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's fine. The podcast is about discussing the film, so we don't need more clarity than that, I suppose. So I'll ask you the usual, why did you pick this, Abby?
Because it's weird and we're into that kind of thing.
What kind of thing? Not sleeping.
Just stuff that's a bit, tonally weird. Just, you could see where they were going with it, but did they get there? It's got all the hallmarks, really. There's a bunch of different cameos by people that are confusing. This just, it's all in there.
Well, Anthony, have you seen this before?
I've never seen it before, so it's popped up. I think I might have almost put it up myself a while ago. But I've definitely seen the poster loads of times.
The poster's quite shit, though, isn't it? You can't really see anything. I mean, it's the night, obviously, dark, but the poster's a bit vague, don't you think?
Yes, but I've seen it, so.
I
Okay.
also don't know what you would put for this.
Maybe something more action-packed than just silhouettes somewhere in the darkness. Whatever. No, yeah, good point. I mean, what would I'm not here to do the graphic design 40 years later or 60. How long has it been? Shit, I don't fucking know. Anyway, yeah, actually, you'd seen the poster, never seen it. But what are you like? Are you a Bloom fan or a Pfeiffer fan? Or, is there a reason you might have checked it out before now?
I can't remember why. Probably like a multitude of reasons. Probably looking at Jeff Goldblum stuff, probably looking at John Landis stuff.
Yeah,
And then
but
this
you
is,
didn't get around to it.
But I do feel like I've almost put this up before as a speculative pick.
Sure.
But anyway, like I didn't really know much about it. Like I got, it's easy to get the vibe from the trailer. Like normal man falls into shenanigans, usually mostly crime based.
Yeah.
Although I feel like I should say, because Jamie's not here and he would have brought this up, that this is the first film that John Landis did after The Twilight Zone, which had a huge controversy.
With the
As
whole murdering people with a helicopter controversy, which sounds quite mad, actually.
yeah.
I didn't realize this was the first one after that.
That happened in 83, or probably either 82 or 83, depending on when they were filming, because the film was released in 83 and this was released in 85.
When you said Jamie would have brought it up, I thought you were going to be like, here's the Exorcist connection and a David Lynch connection, and would you. Do you know those? Because those are a little less tragic to deal with. There's not much to, don't want to get into our take on John Landis and his culpability,
I mean, I'm sure there is one. I know David Cronenberg has a cameo in this, and like he's kind of like one step away from David Lynch. That's all I've got.
You know, without him, we shall not have the connection then, unless it accidentally happens.
Indeed.
Right. When Anthony does listen to this later, he's going to be kicking himself.
As if he's been listening to this.
But as for expectations from him, a little mixed. I mean, I like both Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer, and I thought they'd probably work quite well as like leading stars. But then John Landis is a bit iffy. I like some of his stuff. I don't like some of his stuff.
Would fall in the good camp and the bad camp.
Blues Brothers.
Didn't say which. Blues Brothers 2000.
I'll start with the good. I'll start with the good. Sure. Blues Brothers, American Werewolf.
Yeah.
Trading Places.
Mm.
Coming to America, I like.
Mm.
I'm okay with the Three Amigos.
On the bad camp.
Blues Brothers 2000.
Did he actually make that?
Yes.
It felt like some other dickhead would come along and try and cash in, but fucking hell. Yeah, so that, yes.
Like, there's, I forget the names, but like, there are films probably starring Dan Aykroyd, mainly.
Sure.
Or case, any of those kind of throw in there. So this kind of like falls in the middle. It's like, you know, it could be a good Trading Places, or it might be Spies Like Us. That's it. That's the one I was trying to think of. This kind of like sandwiched between those two, and it's like, oh, this could go either way.
Fair enough. I mean, it's not that famous, I don't think. No one like brings it up. It gets compared to After Hours by Scorsese. I think they're very similar in tone and style and all that, and they would be if they're not from the same year. They might be from the same wheelhouse or whatever. I don't love that. People do love After Hours, but I wouldn't say that. It's not my. It's nowhere near. It's not for me. I don't know. If other people are happy, are welcome to it. I'd seen this before. Why did we watch it? Oh, do you know what, Abby? I think we watched it because you were having a Bruce McGill season. He's only a cameo in this, like he is in most things. It's kind of weird.
But what's a cameo, though?
That's a good cameo.
for spoilers for listener, he is an Elvis impersonator, and every time we see him, he's in full costume.
A fanatic, and a gay fanatic, and an angry fanatic. That's pretty good. Yeah. This is quite the jumpsuit he wears, and the hairdo. Oof.
And they steal his car. What a car.
And his man friend's horrible transparent hair. Oh yeah, it steals the scene, does that jumpsuit as well. I mean, the whole room is like a room full of Elvis paraphernalia that Michelle Pfeiffer ends up in because it's her brother's apartment, and then Bruce McGill and his partner turn up to argue with her, and it's just like, it's a good scene. It's a good bit. But we, you know, that's devoid of context. But it was the reason we watched it, I think, right?
I think I had a Jeff Goldblum season as well.
No, surely not. That's too easy.
Yeah.
You don't pick the simple actors who you can find easily and watch their catalogue. Well, people who star in things don't get a season.
But you're right. It was probably Bruce McGill. His season panned out weirdly because a couple of his films are Christian films, and they're all a bit weird after that.
Anyway, so our protagonist is played by Jeff Goldblum. What's his name?
Ed.
Ed something, his surname starts with O, I can't remember. It doesn't matter, isn't it? He's Ed. Nice average Joe name, every average Ed name. And it's a little bit like it's in the Falling Down universe. Like, he is stuck in morning LA traffic and it's like gridlock and miserable, and there's a sense that maybe he's got insomnia, and it could go the direction of he goes insane and starts attacking people in the streets, but more people attack him in the streets, kind of the flip, if anything, of Falling Down. But we get like, oh, what's LA traffic like? Oh, the daily grind, eh? Working in an office where Dan Aykroyd makes racist jokes that you've heard before, with the punchline being a different race to what Dan Aykroyd was expecting.
I did like the other people in their cars so doing weird things.
Yeah, well, what else were the other people doing, for example?
One was
one I remember is a woman crying for no apparent reason.
Yeah, just to give us a flavour of other people's lives, I suppose, isn't it?
There's a guy with a porn magazine.
Oh, yeah, who's watching flicking through a porn mag in their car?
And I think there's one involving food, but I don't remember what it was.
Somewhere there was like a Fellini reference where a man is banging on the glass trying to float off into the sky like 8 and a half. Oh, eyebrow. Yeah, but anyway, it is mainly concerned with saying, look, plebs watching a movie in the cinema, this guy's just like you with his humdrum life. You don't have exciting things happen. Like Michelle Pfeiffer screaming and asking you for help and running off with you. You're bored, aren't you? You have to go to meetings where you're tired and listen to people ask you about chords and things. What job did he have? Because it was impenetrable, like office meeting where it's just, oh, the B63, do you have the code 26?
He said he was an aerospace engineer.
There were planes dotted about the office, I think, stuff like that, I think, yeah. Some crucial bolt that needs to be in place, and Jeff Goldblum's going to kill someone because he hasn't done the update of his whatever tally sheet, who knows. But it's all, you know, it's cubicles and blurry-eyedness. And I think the only other thing going on in Jeff Goldblum's life is his wife is cheating on him, and he's sort of staring. He doesn't really... what's his reason for insomnia? Just the mundanity of existence is getting on him, perhaps.
Yeah, he does. He doesn't know.
General ennui, I suppose.
Yeah. Just stares into space, into the middle distance, while celebrating his breakfast, that kind of thing.
Just lacks excitement.
Yeah. I feel it's a bit patronising as an audience member going, oh, yeah. Like, it don't remind me of life and jobs and how boring they are, and try and suggest, like, just provide escapism. Don't fucking make it about me, the watcher, and my job in aerospace technicalities. I don't know, whatever. How do you guys feel about every man living a boring life setups? I find them a little bit like, I don't know, they're always written by people who don't have an everyman job. I don't know, I'm saying that writers often have had jobs, so
it's a staple of this era, though, because the 80s was really, it was really when we started treating people very badly, and just, you are a cog in a machine. Now you have a computer that's telling you what to do. So it got, that was when it really turned and got worse. So there's a whole slew of films from this era where it's just a guy who works in a cubicle and lives in a grey world has something happen.
I think perhaps the difference being between the 70s and the 80s, when this was in the zeitgeist, is the 70s, there's a general feeling, it feels like it was before our time, but like the general premise is everyone knows everything's shit. Things are shit and everyone knows it. And in the 80s, commercial television and the media and the world around you seems exciting, modern, and ever increasing in technology. Like pop music is insane. The culture is that of money and success and parties and all that. Progress and what a time to be alive. And then the reality is cubicles, tedium. The bulk of the public is doing menial bullshit that they're being sold to as like an exciting life, but actually it's just as shit as it's ever been, perhaps, for most people. So maybe that's why it was.
So the 80s is when we all started pretending life wasn't shit, but actually it was.
Mm. Yes, exactly. I think that might be why that is a common trope of the movies in this 80s to 90s. And then after that, it's like, it's long established that of course life is shit, but
what can you do?
by the always, people were like, well, I have distractions now, at least better ones than a Walkman with Madonna in, like a bit more to it now. Anyway, Jeff Goldblum can't sleep. He divulges this to Dan Aykroyd, who thankfully we never see again after he leaves him midday. Like again, he like just abandons work to go for a nap at lunchtime because he hasn't slept again. So I guess he's on like 2 nights of no sleep. I never know how seriously to take insomniacs, when they say they haven't slept, do they feel like they haven't slept and they have, or are they genuinely running on nothing?
There's two kinds. There's the kind where you do sleep, but the quality is very poor, so it doesn't really help. And then there's the other kind where you don't know you've slept, so you don't have the psychological reward of having slept.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bitch. I sympathize with people with insomnia. I've occasionally had things that could be considered close to it, but aside from getting grumpy and giving up, I don't know, I haven't suffered with insomnia, so I don't know.
I will say Ed probably goes about it the worst way, though, because he's just kind of like every time you see him trying to sleep, he's just sitting up in bed staring.
Putting
And
his
it's like,
hands over his head. Is he crazy?
it's like if you're really trying to get to sleep, this isn't how to do
Well, recommend putting on a
it. I'd
cassette
recommend at least
player?
closing your eyes.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to
Although
start giving
that's
out
not very
tips.
filmic, is it?
Well, filmically, if he gets to sleep and it's fine, nothing happens. So we have to start somewhere. But it's a headspace, isn't it? Insomnia is your just mind is racing, and when as soon as you have to sleep, you can't. Like if you have to be up in the morning, your brain just plays a cruel trick on you and goes, "Time to think about everything." And then, like Jeff Goldblum in the day, can't f focus or think straight. But not to worry, he goes home to have a cheeky midday nap just to see if he can stop himself getting fired. I don't know if it's a great idea to go home at lunchtime and sleep and come back, especially in what we establish as LA traffic. So.
Well, it seems like a 2 hour like round journey.
Yeah, but let's not get into the office hours of the 80s and how that worked. But he goes and he has a little he has a funny sound, and it's the funny sound of his wife fucking someone else, presumably in their marital bed. Do we see much of it? We don't do it. It's just a sort of
No, we don't see anything. We just see him stare through the window.
and like a guy and his wife, like not. It's not X-rated or anything, but his reaction is just to stare and drive, and then leave and drive away, and not he doesn't confront his wife, does he? He just stares, and I guess he doesn't know what to do. And Dan Aykroyd, is it, has suggested to him weirdly. It is like, oh, what do you do about insomnia? Just pop on a plane to Vegas. Have a fucking wild night out, maybe see this particular prostitute I recommend or something. I just fucking party up in Vegas and you go, how in what world does that help you? Like, how does that help with insomnia or stop you from any, like, what does that solve
I
in any
think it's
way?
like he probably. Oh, I was just going to say he probably senses that he's probably feeling like this because he's feeling a bit unexcited.
Oh,
Yeah,
so
they're
like.
really tiptoeing around depression in this. Like, they don't want to say it, but he's got it.
So it's a holistic approach. If you improve your life by injecting some excitement, you'll calm yourself again. He'd just be sleeping on the plane, wouldn't he? So, I mean, to catch a plane so quickly. I mean, Vegas is quite close, I guess, to LA, but
Relatively, yeah.
still is seems like a bit much. Anyway, the suggestion is implanted in his mind, so he drives to an airport. When he can't sleep, but his wife's cheated on him, and she's in bed with him, and he's doing what you said, aren't they? Staring, sitting open-eyed, and he pops his ass to an airport. He's parked up in the multi-story or whatever, and then what happens?
And then a woman lands on his bonnet.
She has committed suicide.
Enter
No, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer, who, for reasons we don't know yet, is being chased by some Iranians.
Yeah, there's a bit of a few question marks around these Iranians. A, of course, because John Landis has snuck himself in as amongst the more authentic looking, at least Middle Eastern looking actors. But he looks fine. I'm happy with them all looking like beardy ne'er-do-well assassins who are just up to something, gangsters or whatever, these four Iranians. But there's some suggestion that what the Iranians are shouting, now Landis doesn't speak, his character's silent, but the other three might be shouting gibberish. Is that the case? Or,
that's,
I mean,
what
I
it,
don't speak.
That's certainly what it felt like.
Like an impression of a Middle Eastern type gangster getting all cross.
Which would fit with the kind of weird slapstick energy that they have all the way through the film.
But it does feel like, you know, if these are Iranians or whatever, it can't we get, can't they shout in a genuine language, something we wouldn't understand? Is that, is this just a
there
general,
a,
like, impression?
There is a, right, there are two things that John Landis thinks are very funny that may or may not land. One of them is excessive mayhem. The other one is people making weird noises.
Well, yeah, it's the incredibly violent slapstick in this. So it's a mix of like genuine scary violence and like pulling a door open and hitting yourself in the head territory. It's a real mix. It's a kind of a mix of stuff, isn't it? Where Landis has got this, you know, he thinks a lot of things that maybe aren't so funny is funny. I mean, it's just sort of subjective, isn't it? Like, it depends what you go in for, right? But
yeah,
some of the comedy...
Maybe some of these things were funny in the
80s. Some of the comedy does not land this. That's all.
Hey!
Thank you.
Unlike
like
that
my
one.
Jokes. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's problematic, but I don't think it's a deal breaker, the fact that these caricatured Middle Eastern gangsters, they're the main threat of the of our characters, but they're also like four comedy characters, that are not quite Three Stooges, but they, you know, they have like, they use as comedy characters. Like there's one scene where they're in like Goldblum and Pfeiffer, or Ed and
Diana.
Ed and Diana,
like the
are
princess.
Yeah, that's right. She says that. So, Diana, like the Doors. What? What? What I thought was Diana, like the cat from Pinocchio. just me. Sorry. When they're in a scene like negotiating fucking emerald situation that we haven't talked about, that they keep cutting to these four I'll say Iranians, Iranian gangsters, and they're just like all eating nuts and seeds or something, and just really going through some peanuts or something. And we just, and there's a room of tense people in negotiations, and there's just these four pricks fucking chomping away on some nuts. And then occasionally they just cut to normal looking henchmen or people in the room doing nothing. So Landis has put himself as one of these knobheads for the lols. And he obviously thinks there's a lot of comedy to be had, and I'm not sure every time it works.
I will say, it took me until that scene, the one with the nuts, when I actually realised it was John Landis.
Oh,
before then, I was like, that guy kind of looks a bit like John Landis. It's funny, an actual Iranian guy who looks a bit like director. And then, and then once I got a real close look at him, I was like, oh dear.
Yeah, I think, I guess a lot of people don't know what he looks like. Abby, I think you're the one. I mean, you told me, I think, when we saw it the first time, you just went, is that John Landis? You know, I think you spotted him.
Well, that's... when I watched this film, the first one, I was like, there's that guy, and that guy. Like, did we just... like, I can't remember if it was on or off pod, but like Anthony said, David Cronenberg is on it. Jack Arnold is another director, is in it. Paul Bartel is a director, He's in it. Jonathan Demme, Richard Franklin, Carl Gottlieb co-wrote Jaws. And the list just goes that Jim Henson is in this.
Yeah, Jim Henson is just in a fucking cat house or brothel. He's in like a casino-y brothel, aren't they? And he's using a phone, and then some more intimidating person tells him to like get out the fucking way or something. And you're sitting there going, is that fucking... Is that, like, you spend your time just going, who's, is that Henson? What? And then, is it later on, Abby, we were watching it, and then in the airport...
Over the tannoy, they asked for Frank Oskowitz, which I assume is a reference to Frank Oz.
Yeah, so it's odd to have, like, Muppet connections in there as well. Just, I don't know, just some jokes for them, I guess. Well, not, I mean, we've spotted them, but, like...
It's just bizarre. The number of people who are in this.
I will say again, because Jamie's not here, and I feel like he would probably bring up this point as well, it is kind of debated whether John Landis got all these kind of like famous directors and like Hollywood elite to make cameos in the film as a kind of sign of solidarity for him.
Like to vouch for him being still respectable.
Mm.
Yeah, I can see that.
Although, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he does do lots of cameos like this in his other films as well. So,
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to have had that happen and to be culpable. I know I don't want to get into the details of it all because he's obviously either a horrific murderer or you know responsible for deaths. I mean, there's no real way around it. Where does the blame lie? I mean, it's on him most. I don't know. You know, fucking hell. It's dark and sad and real. And I think it isn't beyond it isn't cynical to suggest that trying to continue your film career, you know, you want to carry on. I mean, you know, you don't just because you know you've done something wrong and you want to get past it is understandable. And perhaps you'll go, who's got my back here? Can you? You're still my friends, right? Being my thing. I very much don't want to just hang up my hat with the movie industry and stop. So maybe it's cynical of him. But maybe he just has pals and it's a separate thing. Who cares? He's in it as a comedy character. He's one of four Iranians trying to get murder like out of nowhere. Some characters we don't know yet. One is another, I guess, Middle Eastern looking chap in a suit who is on the arm of Michelle Pfeiffer's character, Diana, like the princess. And she is like, shit! She runs away, jumps over a small, I don't know, balcony or whatever to Goldblum's car and is screaming. And they, you know, they drive away with the Iranians shooting at them. And then there's a bit where they have to climb, like the Iranian guys have climbed over and then have to climb back up to get, you know, to chase in the car park. The people getting away, and John Landis clearly has failed to climb up properly. Sort of awkwardly slotted his legs into the, and they cut before they finish him climbing the thing. But there's no way he got up the car park structure.
I wonder if part of this was him volunteering some kind of public humiliation of himself. As just part of it.
It's not the right kind of sorry, but maybe. No, but we have your classic driving around and around a car park and getting away bit. And then the least helpful police officer ever. There's this woman, off-duty cop, talking to the person who lets people in and out of the car park, the car park attendant, I guess. And it's just like, I don't want to help. I'm off duty. And then actually Pfeiffer chips in with like telling this guy she's just, you know, commented, like got in the car with and is relying on. She's like, maybe even though our lives are in danger, for some reason, don't tell the police. And then he's like, I'm going to. And then she's like, do I have to? And then Pfeiffer insists that, no, it's fine. Bye. We're definitely not weird and... There's definitely not people with guns coming. Bye.
They, rather than taking her home, which is what she requested, they actually go to the marina to try and speak to her gentleman friend.
Jack.
Jack and get turned away.
Sorry, he has the least interesting name for a boat ever. Do you guys remember what his boat was called?
Jack's boat.
Jack's boat, yeah. Not Jackie McBoatface. Jack's boat. Just in case.
Or even just something like, I don't know, the Zephyr or something. Not just Jack's boat.
But yeah, what happens, Abby?
They get turned away by Larry, who is an extremely burly gentleman, who I understand was famous at the national level.
Yeah, he feels like he could be a famous bodybuilder or something. He's
described like a wardrobe. As a fitness personality.
Sure, he could be a stand-in for Lou Ferrigno or whatever.
But he actually does a good job for someone who's a wardrobe, as you so deftly described him.
Well, he uses more words than this, but he tells Pfeiffer to fuck off, and that Jack said no, or Jack's wife said no thanks. You're through, and it's inferred that she has some sort of well, we know because of the plot, but she is the ex-mistress or mistress of Jack, this figure that gets talked about a lot, and then it sort of comes up at the end and basically tacks on a saving end story for everyone. Like, he basically is the superhero rich guy that luckily this woman has fucked a few times, at least, and is, I don't know. He sort of waves a magic wand at the end of the movie and goes, and now, happy ending, fuck it. But anyway, until now.
On the boat, we have, I think, instant one of unnecessary gratuitous boobs.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
Because Larry has a lady friend with him, and they have an odd little sequence before the Iranian thugs show up and start destroying the boat looking for the what we will know later to be emeralds, but we're still not really sure what they're looking for at this point.
Yeah, Larry and this woman are about to cop off, and as you say, we get the apparently necessary, like, 80s boobies scene.
It was my... it's very difficult for a film to date if it doesn't make sense to begin with, but this is a very dated bit of it where there's just fucking boobs all over the place and there's no tat for tit. I will accept tit if there is tat to counterbalance.
As in tat as in...
Oh, well, with men, you obviously can't show the penis necessarily, but, you know, they got cats. Bums.
We do have bums.
Larry is in the he's in the same state of address as Arnold Schwarzenegger in
The Long Kiss Goodbye.
The Long Goodbye, not The Long Kiss Goodbye. Yeah, he's, you know, in trousers down his knees with this woman when our the Iranian guy gangsters turn up, I guess, looking for Pfeiffer. And they have a running joke of how they don't just search for things, they smash the shit out of everything like it's what was that game show in the 90s with Neil Buchanan where kids would raid a house looking for
Finders Keepers.
Yeah, they smash things up like it's Finders Keepers or the gangsters doing Finders Keepers. You know, They look in things like cutting open pillows, you understand, looking for something. But like, you're never going to find a tiny thing if you smash, obliterate the whole room. Now you've got a mess in which the thing can be lost. I don't know. I don't think I need to school people on how to look for things. But making everything a mess is not going to help you in the long run, I don't think.
Unfortunately, I think that's it's one of the comedy bits with these Iranians.
I described earlier.
John Landis has clearly written a scene for himself where he gets to have loads of fun, where people set up a set with loads of objects in and the art department do a lovely job, and then he obliterates everything with his chum. I'd love, that's the role I'd want, though, isn't it? To smash up an entire room and be a prick to everyone.
Agreed.
Yeah. The movie does mostly consist of Ed, who is politely held. So a woman who is screaming and running for her life, and he knows there are dangerous people after he's seen them. He could be in danger. She's keeping it like relatively vague. They've only just met after all. But, you know, once he's shepherded her out of immediate danger and he's going to maybe drop her off somewhere, the movie has to spend a bunch of time fiddling around trying to justify whether or not Ed could leave now. And they keep bringing it up like, yeah, though this is the perfect opportunity for him to leave, and the contrivance means he will not. And it, to some extent, I was like, all right, get over it. We know he's not going to... I mean, yes, I don't believe that he would stay in all these circumstances. But why do we keep why does the plot feel the need to like question whether or not this would be a good out for him? Like, he could just go home at any time now. What do you guys make of them like doing that repeatedly, having him nearly leave the drama?
Well, he's very passive character throughout the whole thing. Like, he pretty much, there's very few actual decisions he makes, and I feel like that kind of works into his character.
Yeah, the idea is like, what if you're reluctantly drawn into a kind of noir thriller and you have no place there, and yet you are the hero in the moment because the attractive woman has asked you for help, and what you're going to do? And you are in immediate, like, immediately he has to get away or he will be in danger. So it's, the motivation is there, but you're right. All he really does is want to make a phone call, is it? To get a cab or something? Because they lose the car.
At one point, yeah. I think it's fine at the beginning. Like, at this point, it's fine because he's just like, well, yeah, you know, I can take you somewhere and leave.
Yeah, I can Uber you around for a bit.
That's fine.
Yeah. And then there's an element of wanting, like, they play up this idea that when he's curious about her, he can ask her stuff, and she's so distraught that she can sort of, you know, not tell him that much initially. And then they give themselves one of those outs where I think it's they're on a film set, which we can talk about in more detail, but they go to a film set where she wants to meet her friend, who is in an extra in the movie, or maybe a small part or something. And at that point, he's like, okay, bye. And he actually does leave, and he just hangs about, pratfalling through bits of fake set and embarrassing himself. And then people on the set are questioning, who's that guy? What's he here for? And then Pfeiffer's like, oh, yeah, technically he's with me. But, you know, they've parted company now, and yet Jeff Goldblum is like, no, it wasn't even that scene. There's one where he literally has left and she's fine and presumed safe, and he goes back out of a sort of, kind of,
yeah,
her a bit.
By
so
that
I guess
point,
I'll go back for no reason.
By that point, it's a little bit tedious because you're like, well, at this point, it's quite obvious he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, but they don't want to think. It's just the only excuse is, I just feel like there's still something. I don't want to go back to my mundane life now. I could at least, you know, sort of check she got where she was going in the hotel or whatever. I don't know. Too unnecessary for me.
Although they do at least get them to talk about it occasionally.
Better to bring it up than it's better for it to come up as an issue and have some resolution than us to be like saying, well, I would have left by now. I don't think I would have stayed with this random stranger all this time. Especially if she didn't want to go to the police. She has enough excuses why not to, because she, it's all a bit elaborate, but, you know, she's worried that you know, she's in danger one way or another. Or, I mean, her excuse is she has smuggled emeralds, but she doesn't tell Jeff Goldblum that initially. Do they go to
after
her
the
brother's
book?
First?
They go to his, yeah. They go to her brother's Elvis shrine house.
Yeah, it's a hell of a way to live, isn't it? Surrounded by Elvis knickknacks, pictures to dress as him. I mean, Elvis didn't even surround himself. I mean, he had loads of merchandise, and you know, Elvis didn't live surrounded by pictures of himself. He probably had a lot of memorabilia around him, but he didn't. You know, I didn't live in a small flat. But, you know, Graceland was small, but it wasn't tiny. Like, flat with... I mean, obviously... But, like, it's a delusional character. Like, what is he doing? And he drives a massive white Cadillac, which is kind of a comedy reveal that when they borrow the car.
He did say, though, that he's basically had to work as an Elvis impersonator 24/7 to pay the debts that he incurred while she was living there.
Yeah, he's Bruce McGill, who impersonates Elvis. I wasn't even sure if he impersonates Elvis so much as it just lives his life as if he's the king. In his Cadillac, that says the king.
That would
king
be very weird. I'm assuming he's an impersonator.
I mean, yeah, I mean, what else? Yeah. There's so many Elvis impersonators. It's almost like a culture within itself, isn't it? It's almost like beyond parody now.
I think Elvis is the only one where you actually have impersonation contests just for one person. I don't think anyone else does that.
Michael Jackson? I've seen a Michael Jackson lookalike and performance competition. He's one of the big ones that gets impersonated. But it's like, Elvis Presley, not only do you get competitions where Michael Jackson, sorry, Elvis Presley is the only one where you get competitions to impersonate him only, but everyone else is expected to dress up like it when they go. It's like a real, we're all, it's like, I am Spartacus, I am Elvis, like, thing going on. It's a real fucking thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Elvis, mad Elvis people exist. Bruce McGill is one, and he's got the side story of having a balding gay friend, lover, and he's narked off with Diana because she's been missing. She's gone off, like, the idea is she went to another country with someone she knows that has been murdered now at the start of the film, and she smuggled emeralds for part of the cut, right? That's the idea.
Which also implies that she takes out of her vagina in the bathroom in this scene.
Where is she going to keep emeralds? Like, just what are they going to do otherwise?
I don't know.
Just secrete them, innit?
Weirdly, that's a really similar scene to get in. I'm not sure if it's her or not, but it's one with George Clooney where when he gets ready, she shaves legs and everything. And in that case, I think she puts in a cup for the reason of contraception. And it was just really similar. So I thought, oh, right, she's getting ready to have sex with him. That's a bit bold. But no, she's pulling her emeralds out of the old woohoo.
I like the idea that if she had her boyfriend with her still, he'd go to the bathroom with her. And like in the scene in something like, I think it's Casino, when they're smuggling diamonds. Joe Pesci's wife's got it in her hair. And then when there's a suggestion there's one missing, he violently shakes her hair to get it out. I like the idea of someone violently shaking her vagina to just rattle out the laugh.
They could have also had a similar bit to Plunkett McLean.
Oh, that's a girl. Emerald. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that bit.
Pfeiffer and McGill throw down, but basically come to, like, you know, he and his partner leave in a hissy fit of sorts, having our brother and sister argument. And the tramps who have told Jeff Goldblum not to park outside because the cops will tow you, unfortunately, you know, they have towed him despite, you know, despite Diana saying, park you all the time. Anyway, so he's lost his car despite being told. And now they have to borrow Bruce McGill's insane Elvis is not dead white Cadillac to drive around. There's a few car changes in this. There's a sort of bit of excitement come comedy, I guess. They steal a limo at one point, right? From some French gangsters that seem to have very little to do with the plot.
Oh, yeah. You can say that about a lot of people.
I suppose. There's a lot of, like... Well, the thing, noirs often have this element of we don't see the full picture of what's going on.
Mm.
But, as I was saying, the main thing is Diana has been fucking a millionaire. Jack. We don't see him till the end, and he's ill and dying or something. And at this stage, in the movie, his wife, who he's still with, but, you know, is not on good terms with, is back in his house trying to make sure she gets you know, make sure the will is in order so that she gets the bulk of the fortune and she can see off any potential mistresses or, you know, keep him in line while he's in his when he's in a sort of home hospital bed, right? So Jack has been fucking Diana on the side, but she's also connected to some Iranian criminals and is in trouble because she smuggled emeralds that they want. And it's then that is connected to some sort of political and land
Something,
grab
yeah, something about a
estate,
real estate.
real
I
estate
that
deal.
went right over my head, I have to admit.
Yeah, because there's a is she there's another there's a woman who there's like a woman they talk about who's this intimidating gangster lady or a mob boss of sorts. I don't even know what race she is, but the Iranians work for her, and she is the person who's supposed to get these emeralds and pay for them or something, but she's also after them and has sent the assassin. So it's all quite convoluted, and it doesn't really matter that much to us because we're kind of in the position with Jeff Goldblum and we're just going along with it. That's the sort of story that unwinds, isn't it? And what do you think of it, Abby? Is this like, does it matter what the MacGuffin for the whole motivation is, or did you like the fact that we don't fully explore what Michelle Pfeiffer's life was like before this?
In principle, the idea is fine. It was the execution that let it down. Because if the comedy's not going to revolve around her and there isn't tension because they spend a lot of time not doing things,
Fighting around.
then really, it should have either she should have been funnier or there should have been more tension. It just hit this nowhere place in the middle.
It's like she's desperate for help, and then it becomes she's not that desperate for help. So now it's just about finding the right people. It's not an investigation because Diana is just trying to meet with sympathetic people in her life to help her, and she's having problems to doing that, and that's filling in Jeff Goldblum and the people in her life that are connected to the danger she's in.
Actually, thinking about it, there's the only reason that Ed is in this at all is because they thought they needed a male lead, when really this could have just been Michelle Pfeiffer's film.
Well, the premise of the film is a man with insomnia with a boring life has an exciting noir adventure with a femme fatale. So without the man, it's just what if you're a mistress whose
Well, no,
partner dies?
she could still get in a guy's car and they could do that, but the man doesn't need to be so significant in the story.
The fact that they kill her actual boyfriend off could be the only thing that you need, isn't it? You could have it so that we do something else instead of establishing Jeff Goldblum's boring life. But her dubious business partner, emerald hiding man, who I don't know, like there's an implication that they're dating, or at least you know she's friends with him. He could be dead, and that could be her only connection. Like she's a mistress, so she's not like a gangster herself. So once she loses a person who's a criminal, she just has the valuable item, and then the drama can be about that. But I guess so much of the writing is about a man who shouldn't be here with a woman who's in quite a spicy situation. I don't know. There's no point trying to fix it, really, is there? We got what we got.
I see what you mean, though, Abby. I mean, he's so passive all the way out. It could easily work if they switched it up and made her the main character and him like the secondary, somewhat comic relief in a more tension-filled thriller.
Yeah, because really, they should have had drawing from something like, I don't know, Romance in the Stone, something like that. Really, there should have been a scene at the start of her in, where did they say she went?
I can't remember.
She picked up the diamonds in Switzerland.
So there's a scene there. She doesn't know she's being followed. She comes home. She thinks everything's fine. She gets attacked by the Iranians. She jumps into a guy's car. I thought that should have gone.
You could lose it. I don't know. You could do a more female-focused story. I mean, she is part of it's a duo, isn't it? It's like the two of them. Okay, but they also it's meant to be like a romance, right? Like to some extent, or like a slow. It's not really
Sort of.
romantic. It's more. It's meant to be. Wouldn't it be better for if you were a boring man? Wouldn't it be more fun to be with this sexy, dangerous woman than your horrible, cheating wife who's fine but not it's faithful? You know, like it's wish fulfillment or something. I think. Whatever.
It is
What?
what it is.
Excuse me. Yes. The thing she wants to do next is go to a. Well, I guess it does a little joke reveal where it's like a Miss World thing going on, is it? What happens in the scene where
Oh
they
yeah, like
all cut or whatever?
someone's taken like one of the Miss World people hostages, and then it reveals that oh, actually it's a film set.
Yeah, that's a sin for me. I went off film and TV that's about film and TV.
Well, it's not
I
about
have
that. It's
no
just,
place for it anymore.
it's more like for the joke. It features a film set and it is LA. There's like films being shot everywhere in LA, right? Contextually,
I
it's
think
not that
that's it.
weird.
I'm probably just bored of it as a trope.
It's more just like a jokey reveal of like a twist, like, aha, I got you. It wasn't, this isn't the next part of our plot. I mean, it is the next part of our plot, but that woman is actually going to die violently later on. Not
But not in the
now.
way we set up.
Yeah, exactly. Who is her friend? Like, she's just someone she knows, right? And she's an actress. And she wants to give her the emeralds to put in a secret. And this is important, a secret pocket in her big coat for nighttime shoots. That just look after it because I'm in it. She's sort of using her friend as a donkey or whatever. I don't know. That's not the right term. She's just her friend's helping her out, isn't it? By
Yeah.
looking after the jewels. And so this
Well,
the go on.
I was going to say, while Jeff Goldblum is outside just breaking various things, I
Safety
will say I did
systems.
quite laugh when not when he like when he sat down and fell through the boulder, but the fact that he
Yeah.
just kept sitting there and was waiting there the next scene.
That was funny. People coming up to him and he's just sitting in it like, no big deal. I mean, he's already fallen through a papier-mâché wall to unimpressive women, so yeah. And then he tries to make a call and the people carry away the phone because it's a prop phone on a pole, you know. Ha ha ha. We're laughing our fucking socks off. Jeff Goldblum and his buggy eyes making us all roll in the aisles. So the main thing is this woman is in the film, she's like an attractive woman, and she's in the film presumably because she's banging the producer who's making the film. I don't know what Landis is trying to say there, but he's got a lot of the crew from his action, the film that they're making are featured in this bit in the fake film, which is maybe some of that
Makes
annoying
sense.
films about film stuff you don't like, Harvey. But yeah, as you say, I mean, it's applicable. If anyone can act like they're making a film, it's the people making a film. They're certainly doing it, pretending they're making a film right now, or right then. So yeah, she leaves the jewels in that important coat with a hidden pocket, and then
We'll
lets.
come back to that.
Yeah, I mean, basically that one was just there to have a quick chat and be murdered brutally. I mean, actually, let's talk about it now because it's just when they circle back to needing the coat with the emeralds in, the actress has gone home with the producer partner or whatever to. Now they finished. It's the morning. Of this, they're filming in Miss World at night in the film. That's with a hostage situation. Don't know what this film's going to be. Jack, and you might want to watch this film, Abby. Into the Night, into the. Well, I don't know what the film in Into the Night is. Into the Night. Would you watch it? Miss World contest goes wrong. Maybe someone shoots Donald Trump.
Well, they made Miss Congeniality like 15 years later, so,
Maybe he's a pre.
and
He's a prequel to that.
that's an okay film.
Yeah, sure.
She's having a sexual relationship with it's either the producer or director. I think it's the producer.
Yeah.
It's unclear whether it's actually romantic or just, Hollywood.
It doesn't matter though, because she's cool with it. She's not like doing it. It doesn't. They're fine with each other, I think, is the idea. I don't think it's
Yeah.
like
But then they
she's not.
get raided by the Iranians and they drown her in the sea. This is one of the most tonally weird comedies we've ever done.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like there, it happens a couple of moments. There's one moment just before that where Jeff Goldblum discovers like a room full of dead people as well.
What was the room full of dead people?
Oh, when he goes looking for her, she's gone up to see that guy, and then all those people are dead. And David Bowie, who's that?
Oh, that. Sorry, yeah, that was a little bit later on. Yeah. Oh no, what
has a fight with the neighbor from the Addams Family.
Oh, we've got to get back to like
before.
We
can't...
Go
yes,
on.
I feel like we need to talk about David Bowie first.
Well, yeah, just
I
to
think,
put.
I think my favorite.
Go on.
I was going to say, I think my favorite little cameo in this film is by David Bowie,
being with his original teeth.
And his unoriginal moustache.
He just turns up in all of this chaos with Jeff, not Jeff, with Ed alone, and he's just like, "Oh, I've been watching you. You're very good."
It's
just
very weird.
Seems to be under the impression that he's some sort of secret agent or something.
I don't.
And then is kind of scared away by the cops, and then comes back a little bit later in the scene we're talking about.
Yeah,
and I think if he was just in that scene, or maybe if they kept that gag going where he keeps thinking he's some sort of super secret agent who's brilliant, and then is like accidentally thwarted all the time by him.
Yes, he's so brilliant in his doing nothing and saying and doing very little. He's great, isn't he?
But
I
then,
don't know how David Bowie's character has been watching him either. It's like, I've been watching you. It's like, have you? You haven't been in any background shots or any.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem possible you've been watching them. How have you been watching them? Why haven't you intervened?
And then the next and only other time we see him is like he's just murdered 4 or 5 people, and there's like a tense scene where knives have to be wrestled out of other people's hands, and then just gone from the film.
It's both a cameo that's too small and too long, isn't it? Because David Bowie's bringing very little to the role. It's not like a role, really. He just says stuff, and I thought he sounded a bit like Ricky Gervais doing a cameo. In a kind of
yes, he did, didn't he?
Hello, I'm in this for no reason, and
yeah.
I'm on to you. I do want to give credit to this scene. I think it's the only time I've ever seen three people having one knife fight.
Yeah, and the Jeff Goldblum just bows out of it and leaves the security guard of some other guy deal with it, doesn't he? Just fuck him.
Who's already been stabbed? He's been stabbed once, sort of taking a moment to gather himself. Then he comes back into the fight to have more knife fighting.
What I love about the scene as well is, so Jeff Goldblum has let Diane go to whose hotel? Someone they meet up with some dude. They like have a scene in a casino, one that is frequented by Jim Henson and brothel. And it's like an exclusive members only thing, I think, like a high rollers. And Jeff Goldblum has to go in and sort of meet someone he doesn't know. And he talks a security guard into seeing someone in a bathroom, has a confrontation in the bathroom. And I think there's some old guy comes out of a stall who has been banging some prostitute in there. Oh, ho ho, sex jokes. And
yeah,
another
unnecessary boobs.
Lovely. And we established basically that Jeff Goldblum can basically wants to make a connection to someone who will help Diana get rid of the emeralds or something, is it? Or is it some other reason?
Or just help her somehow.
Yeah, and this is a guy who was later then murdered by David Bowie off camera.
Yeah,
and but the security guard is left to have a knife fight, a really tense knife fight with a guy having already, as you said, Abby, succumbed to a wound. Well, not succumbed, nearly succumbed to a wound, and fights back. So what I liked about this scene of violent carnage that had unfolded is Ed convinces himself, now that she's safe, Pfeiffer's gone to some bloke that she's all palmed off on the characters from her life. I will leave or talk to a doorman and decide I've forgotten something that is made up so I can go back and see her for no reason. And then he wanders through someone's huge, like, I was going to say pad. It is a pad. like luxury
Penthouse.
apartment, penthouse, that's the word. Yeah. So he wanders through a penthouse with loads of different TVs on in other rooms, huge, enough seats for like a party of people, lavish, gaudy. And he's just wandering around and it's empty and there's just TVs on. It's as if someone is in there or supposed to be in there. And he's like browsing the horizon. Like he goes out to a balcony. And he's just, I really liked how it like followed up Jeff Goldblum quietly walking around expecting to bump into someone. Like, and then, oh, loads of dead people. I trips over a corpse, basically. And then discovers David Bowie's hiding with a knife to Diane's throat, doesn't it? Before getting in quite a fun three-way knife fight of sorts. And then bailing out of there.
It was odd. It felt like a good like 5 minutes of him just walking around.
Real mysterious as well, because we don't know the context of, you know, what's gone on in the penthouse. Or why it would suddenly, like she's only just gone in there. Why is it silent and yet lived in? Yeah, I didn't mind it though. I just don't know why have David Bowie in this just to do like this bit. I don't know. It seems such an odd inclusion. Like you said, Anthony, I would rather hit like have an ongoing gag where maybe David Bowie is a spy or is a double agent or something more mysterious, not just like who's he working for? He's working for the not very in it much French gangster. Like if there's a French white bloke who has two black henchmen who do his dirty work and they are after the Emerald as well. And they have David
Yes.
Bowie sent to follow her. Like presumably David Bowie turns up just after the Iranian gangsters and is allegedly watching her trailing them or something. And David Bowie thinks Dan is like slying up to something beyond the surface level, just as as a joke, I suppose, isn't it? But then it also is incredibly violent as well as trying to be funny. It's a very strange film. But yeah, he's out of it then. So fuck it, isn't it? Weird.
It's so weird. They really should have just, I don't know, picked five people, any five people, and just made the film with those parts.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
agree. I feel like I was vibing with the film for a long time. Like I just liked the atmosphere of like LA at night and then
Yes.
getting into hijinks and stuff. And I can very much pinpoint the moment that it kind of all fell flat, and that's when the night ended.
Oh yeah, and they just go to sleep in like a. At one point, they go to sleep in like a secret tunnel for no reason for like 9 hours. Or Jeff Goldblum
And then it's
doesn't.
pretty much just a cut to, oh, now it's 8 hours later. And it's like, well, why didn't you just do this all in one night? Like,
Yeah.
cut it down a bit, cut like 20 minutes off the film, have this all in one night, make it less convoluted, and it would have worked.
Give it some pace so that, you know, a night is, you know, potentially, you've got potentially 12 hours to work with, you know, maybe like if he goes to bed early, goes to the airport, and then like they
If
time
they
check.
establish it's like, oh, let's say Thanksgiving time, so it's autumn, winter, the nights are long.
I'll be too cold though for like you. Oh yeah, it doesn't even
But
matter.
then
It's
they
long, right?
don't.
The film's 3 hours, so you could fit. It could be like it as if real time, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's just, I was going to say, an hour and a half. I mean, you can easily make it so that it all works in one night. And you wouldn't particularly question it. I mean, I've seen it before in some films where it's like,
Yeah.
well, this would have taken too long, but it's fine because that's the premise.
Yeah,
It
well,
happened in
that's
one night.
one crazy night where you decide to go to an airport and fall in love with a diamond, an emerald smuggler, who gets you in all sorts of trouble. It's that. So yeah, it does. It definitely. You're right. You're right. As soon as it's daytime, that should be the end of the film where they sober up. It's
Yeah.
kind of like you should have a moment like in The Warriors. When the warriors have ran away all night to get away from all the trouble the warriors got in their film, it was like in the morning and they're back on the survivors are back in Coney Island and it's the sun comes up. It's kind of before anything opens, and it's got an early morning. Yeah, fuck, that was a wild night. It should have that like hangover about to happen feeling, and also ending on him falling asleep makes sense. So that I understand, like. But yeah, don't have an extra day in there that you skip some of anyway, because it seems so unnecessary. It's stupid.
Especially as they literally just skip it. They just have them go to sleep and wake up, and it's like there's no reason this couldn't have been in one night.
Because they like it's a daytime scene where they go back to meet her friend who has the court with the diamonds in, and she that's like it's really quite something the way that she runs out of that apartment because the Iranians are smashing her the apartment looking for the emeralds again. As we've said, they do it's their thing is smashing up things aggressively, and they sort of they go grab her, and then they don't just get her back there and torture her to find out where the emeralds are. Something not brutal but sensible. They batter her and drown her in the sea, and then an onlooker sees them and says, gets the police, and the police turn up. It's a whole thing, and then Michelle Pfeiffer, Diana and Ed turn up while the police are there, and she's like, I just want my coat. It's like, it gets so convoluted as well, like the French gangsters have kidnapped them and have forced them to wanting the emeralds, and she has to get all there. And she basically uses a police officer to come over to the limo. Then through the clever shenanigans of speaking politely to your captors to get out of the car, because there's a policeman here. Do you guys want to get out? Yes, we do. Shall we stand on the side of the road while we let them get away? Yep, we shall, because a police officer is here who doesn't understand the context. And so, I mean, it's like, okay, it's a comedy and it's exciting and they've got away from that. Fine. They've stolen a limo. Go on.
And I will say, like, the moment before, like, the brutal beating and drowning of the woman, there's a moment where John Landis keeps being unable to open the door without smacking his face with it.
Yeah.
And then ends up shooting
the lock.
Shooting the lock off. And it's like, and then right after that, bit of slapstick, brutal death.
Yeah, like, I'm going to shoot a doorknob in anger, and then, yeah, like, horrific murder. It's very...
Also, I don't know what kind of police procedures they have, but I'm pretty sure you don't let a random stranger walk into a murder scene and just take evidence away with them.
Yeah, it's fine. The cops patted it down and walked into her car upon her request and took her name or something. Like, that'll do. Yeah, it's completely bollocks. But yeah, so once they have the diamonds and stuff back, they've escaped the gangsters that are currently after them. They're just like, I know a secret way in. We've got to go to Jack's mansion now, even though he won't see me because we don't quite know what's going on. I have a secret entrance, which is a huge tunnel in just some bushes in like some suburbs, and we're going to climb in through this place that's huge and really anyone could get in. I mean, you're fucking, it's so big to sneak in through, but then there's metal bars that can be easily removed allegedly. But to then say we're going to wait here till it's dark because we can't just, we'll be, there might be staff there or security, and then be like, oh, 9 hours kip for me and Jeff Goldblum's going to watch you for 9 hours, and it's just like, no, don't do this. Just sneak past the staff or something. Be nighttime still. That's the thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Don't be that early in the day. Carry on. Just go there when there's no staff, or she can have some. Just fucking hell. Abby, what did you make of this Jack character, who is the kind of fairy godmother of this mistress who solves everyone's problems and isn't really that connected to it all?
Like most of the other characters, he was wasted. There's the whole something about her not knowing why she can't get back to Jack and keep trying to get back to Jack. And then you find out that he's ill, and there seems to be a genuine affection between them, but it doesn't matter a jot after a certain point. And the only payoff he gets is that he gives them a load of money.
Yeah, his wife turns
out. Oh, yeah.
Well, I can't believe you didn't remember that. That's the whole end.
Yeah, I know.
But the wife comes in, and Jack is like having to put up with his wife who he's been cheated on, but he can put her in her place. There's a sort of, oh, you know, wives, once they got their claws into you, that you just have to sort of fob them off, but live this dual life of mistresses and putting up with your wife, and she has little control because you're a big white rich guy. I don't know why he's like, oh, just divorce your wife, is it? Or no?
Well, they're the older generation in the 80s. So for them, divorce was still probably a little bit taboo.
He's this impossible millionaire who has a mistress he's affectionate for, but he's dying for some reason. And it's just like, what? Who is this? Like, they have an affectionate chat. And I think it's there to be like, Jack sees that Jeff Goldblum, who's standing there picking his nose or whatever, like literally just a fucking third wheel, right? Who's this? Just literally a guy who was in a car park when I was running for my life, and now he's my friend and security guard. And then Jack's like, that's cool. I'm dying. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to eventually leave you a load of money and sort out your problems with a huge CIA bribe later on. But thanks for seeing me. Love you. I'm going to die off screen at some point. Bye. it's really pointless. And it sort of takes... I'd rather never meet Jack. Because it's like the waiting for Guffman... Sorry, I can't believe I said waiting for Guffman, not waiting for Gordo. What a reference.
No, that, Guffman never... is much more in keeping with this film.
You're right. It's that, like, let's never see Jack then. That should be all, it should last all night. Let's never meet Jack. He's just some person from her past who, you know, we don't understand. Maybe he should be in the CIA. It doesn't matter.
Either that or when we see Jack, he should have been someone completely unexpected.
Like a chihuahua in drag. What?
Yes.
Jack's a dog and it dresses up as comical women. What? You should see it, Mime to Share. My God, it's incredible. That would be a surprise. Yeah, or it's, I don't know, we've had Jim Henson and Frank Oz, maybe it should be a puppet. That would be fucking amazing. It's just like one of the Muppets. What do we don't know? That newsreader guy with the glasses. He's Jack. The clues are all there.
He should have been Waldorf and Statler.
Oh, yeah. My God, they're both on the deathbeds and they're like, they'd fit in with John Landis's humour. Oh, this is into the night, more like into the shite. Oh. Anyway, I don't think Waldorf and Statler said shit or shite very often, actually. They're kind of above that sort of potty humour. Anyway, so they get out of there don't they? What happens then?
Yeah, so Jack pretty much just dumps on them all the story that's been happening.
Yes.
And so, and then, you know, and then gives them a way out by dealing with the head of, I assume, the Iranian mafia.
Something like that. It's a woman who's going to just buy their emeralds. She's been trying to get them for free or by paying a henchman. And now they're going to do a trade, which they might have been doing anyway. That might have just gone smoothly if they'd have chilled out and just.
I think it's whoever was Diana's contact fucked up, and then it became her problem.
Yeah,
but he's dead because he fucked up.
So yeah, she didn't know the details. Like, they didn't know this person existed.
Right, and it's all tying up to a time sensitive not retail. What's it called? If there's a whole like that, it doesn't matter. Asset for the cat gangsters and emerald people. Real estate, is that the right word? There's some real estate deal that is connected to this. Anyway, all it really is we're going to leave the emeralds in a flower stall, and I'm going to ask Jeff Goldblum to like represent me and take his life in his own hands. What are you going to do otherwise? Go back to your shitty office job and your cheating wife, or stay with me and be murdered by gangsters in a room, like in a, you know, Iranian, a lavish Iranian gangster's house, or be taken, driven away somewhere, who knows. But he does go, and he has like a stupid speech and tells a bunch of lies to confuse things and be all, he's got some confidence all of a sudden, and now that he's dealing with a woman, he's all like, you know, manly-ish in a kind of passive way. And basically he's like, here's an emerald, if you want the rest, you have to go off, you know, I have to get back safely. That's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, give us 25 grand and let us get on a plane and we'll tell you where they are and job done.
Yeah, and they do that. They go and they even are, like, there's a thing of, oh, I'll just quickly make the phone call. You're really not going to run away and do it from Mexico? Yeah, I'll do it fine. Hello? Some of these other things are flowers. You'll be all right, yeah? Boop, doo, doo, doo. And the person's like, what? It was a really quick message. So they got a flower shop. But also, when they do go, when the Iranian woman and her, I guess, other business people, her associates or her henchmen go to the flower shop, they like And they're not just picking up her order of flowers. They're like tearing apart the flower shop and causing a scene. And then everyone gets arrested at this point, do they? Like the, I don't know if it's the CIA or the FBI or whatever, but everyone is arrested. And the flight is cancelled, isn't it, at the airport? And then people at the flower shop are arrested, and like a whole dragnet's happening. I don't know, something's happening.
Yeah,
Oh.
there's a really brutal shootout when they get off the plane, and like everyone dies. And
It's
then
really,
Jeff Goldblum essentially depresses a guy into shooting himself.
these dickhead Iranian guys are at the airport, aren't they? And the flight is called off, presumably because the CIA are going to arrest someone or other. And the Iranian guys have turned up with their guns at an airport pre-9/11, so it's all they've all sneaked in somehow. And then yeah, they take them and then they kidnap them and drag them out, and then the police are everywhere, or the FBI, as I say, CIA
And the
people.
French guys turn up.
Yeah, and everyone that yeah, every, there's a big shootout and murders, as you say, and then the guys should die. Like the Iranian guys have been dickheads this whole time. They've committed murders and are atrocious and are possibly racist stereotypes. They're all dead. That's fine. And then the last one holding out as like out with a hot with her as a hostage, and then Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, what does he say to her to him to like?
He's just explaining his whole thing. He's just like, well, you know, what, tell me, why can't I sleep? Like, you
Oh
know,
yeah.
is it because blah, all this nonsense is going
Yeah.
on? And it just kind of like sort of depresses him into shooting himself.
It does seem that way, because I mean, there's umpteen people with guns trained on him. He is going to be shot or arrested one way or the other. But yeah, why not be? Oh, I can't sleep. Oh, leave me alone. Goodbye, cruel world. Yeah, so blood spattered. They go. They're taken. They're arrested. And our Ed and Diana are taken to a hotel room, where Jack has his fairy wand waved and. So mysterious guys who want like the classic government stuff where they won't tell you anything as they're taking you somewhere, dump you in a hotel room, answer no questions, leave you there, then go, here's a bag of money. I begrudgingly give it to you. Also, I did like, I think it's funny that the agent who has the big bag of money pay off for them takes a fucking coat full of money and is like, who are you gonna tell? Fuck you. Good day. You like my investigation has been bought off by some rich prick. I'm at least going to get rich off it. So he leaves them. For some reason, you have to stay in their hotel for 24 hours. And then you can just go wherever you want. It's kind of like, okay. And then where, as the audience might be guessing, where's this going then? And the main
They
thing they
don't
do.
have to. It was slightly misleading. They don't have to stay there, but if they want protection, they have to stay there.
Right.
Another day.
Then they're on their own for some reason. I mean, we don't know why this has happened, other than Jack, wink, love you. Love shagging you for a few months. Here's loads of money. Enjoy your new boyfriend. Yeah, and then so they want to do a bluff, basically. The movie's like Jeff Goldblum relaxes uncomfortably on the bed with a big bag of money. All of his chickens have come home to roost, it seems. He just stopped thinking about his wife, and he goes to a love. He has a lovely sleep with his hands behind his back and his legs crossed on the top of the bed. And then, oh no, the money's gone. And there's a was does she have? Does he have a note or something?
She's left him some money in an envelope, inferring that she's gone for good. He talks to a maid, and she establishes what day it is. But you don't know what that means to him. It's sort of
Yeah.
infers that he's been asleep maybe for a couple of days.
Sure. For the whole 24-hour protection window. So she's left him a pittance of the large bag of cash. But it's better than nothing for a night of, I mean, you know, it's a payoff for help at best, but he's not going to be, you know, seeing the girl. But she leaves a note, but then she comes back for him anyway.
Yeah.
Why if you don't leave a note, that's just you're just fucking with a guy then, and you like, does she have a change of heart? Is that the idea? It's just a fake up for us, isn't it? It's not even, it doesn't even make sense. Why would you, leave the note, but then I'll come back? Like, if he'd have come out and gone down the wrong corridor, they'd have never seen each other again. Don't
Think
fucking
that's
come back
maybe
5
why
minutes
she
later.
I think that's maybe why she left money, because she was leaving the premises, I think, to get more clothes and stuff, because she came back differently dressed. And she
I don't
didn't
know.
want him to wake up, her not be there, there be nothing at all, and then leave. Because she doesn't know anything about him. She doesn't know where he lives. She doesn't even know his last name, I don't think.
If I, at least I think they shake hands about halfway through the film and go, "I'm this is who I am." Or maybe not. I'm thinking of something else. If I have a big bag of money with a newly made friend who I'm supposedly going to run away and share it with, I think I'm waking the cunt up to say something. Not, I wouldn't even leave a note saying I've just popped out with all the cash to go get some clothes. I wouldn't. Don't shit someone up like that. You know, they already might think. I. You know, how long can assume, like we watch. You know, we watch Shallow Grave. We know how long it takes to like turn on people when you have a big bag of cash that you don't know what to do with, isn't it?
Or she could just be doing it to fuck with him for no reason.
Yeah, which in that case, she's a bit of a dickhead, and don't know if I want to go running away to Mexico. Do you think we should have had a call back to like what's happening in his work at his house? Like, what? How his wife at some point just she knows he's got he's left with the car. The car at some point has got towed by the police. Like we know that Bruce McGill off camera got. Ran off with his boyfriend when the Iranians trashed his Elvis shrine. So the car was last seen there, but his wife doesn't know where he is. She has no reason to believe he went to an airport. The FBI know where he is. I guess they can inform, but they don't know where he's going. And his work is just like he left during lunch and never came back ever again.
A tangent I would have accepted, would they have been able to shoehorn it together, is that somehow Dan Aykroyd's character and Bruce McGill's character both end up going to look for both Ed and Diana in Las Vegas, thinking they're there, but they're not there.
Oh, right. You're just pitching a sort of sequel into the day.
Those are the two parallel films I would have accepted, that you've got Ed and Diana going in one direction, and you've got Dan Aykroyd and Bruce McGill going in the other direction, and they do eventually meet at the end, and they're all embroiled in the same thing.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I just want. A little close, not closure, because they don't, none of the characters matter that much to the main story. But I feel like what I would have done is just a little cut back to what's happened to all the people who've been affected. I mean, it'd be a bit tragic just at the coroner's office with a dead friend. We cut to the producer guy who's just banging some other woman. Bruce McGill is agitated and telling a story to a barman in like an Elvis impersonation bar or something. And he's trying to calm his gay friend down. Who else? Dan Aykroyd is just being promoted into Jeff Goldblum's job. His wife is making concerned phone calls, but also like blowing that guy. Like
Yep.
who else could we have cut to? Like David Bowie's corpse in an apartment being discovered, and that the guy who's been stabbed in like a veterinarian's office getting stitched up or something. Anyone else?
The tramps behind Bruce McGill's house.
Yeah, maybe they've like finally got a car or something. I don't know. What could they? All they did is mention Don't Park there. Yeah, cut to all the wacky characters who've been affected, the various dead people, the CIA agents going back to work, and the emeralds finally making it onto like a fucking, I don't know, a necklace or something, a real estate deal being closed by someone else. This land's all yours. It's like pat some celebrity on the back who made a lot of money in real estate. I don't know. That for me would have been better than some sort of yay, the couple who dealt with each other a bit, stayed together. The people who nearly left each other on many occasions have bond but bonded through terror. Happily ever after. Yeah. I don't, talking about it to you guys, I feel like I don't like it that much, but I quite enjoyed it. It kept me interested. I did chuckle at some of Landis's jokes. What do you think, Abby? Is it good or bad?
I don't know. It's not perfect. revisions were needed. But at the same time, I did sort of enjoy it. I know, it's just so close to being good.
I think it is good because it's intriguing and it keeps you interested. It's just, it could have been better.
I think it was good for a while. Like I said, I was really vibing with it, like the atmosphere. I was really getting into the smooth jazz with the saxophone, the electric
yeah.
guitar, and like wandering around like the empty streets of LA and stuff like that. I was vibing with the film for a while.
Ugh.
But once it became like daylight and then they went back to night, I don't know, that's when it kind of started falling down for me. And I mean, I do like it,
yeah,
for the most part, but it definitely needed some tightening up.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Is I mean, we already talked about what you'd have changed, but I do agree with you. I think also the ending, not only does it should it not be day, and that I think it's all to get out of jail free card, literally, like you are not going to be arrested because money and rich people. It's like, that's crap. You should maybe, it should be a story where Jeff Goldblum finally does something non-passive that he can use his insomnia powers or something. I don't know. He should do it, like, it should become, he should earn her as a partner or a love interest and earn his money or something. I mean, he does do that stupid deal, but like, it could be a little tighter around the edges. I don't even mind the comedy mixed with actual tense violence that much. That's not a deal breaker. I just, you know, I don't know, better ending, better, more well thought out, whatever. I do like it, you know, it's a tricky one. I like scenes in and of themselves. Quite like watching it play out.
And Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer are charismatic and funny and totally hold the film.
Yeah, definitely.
But and I'm going to channel Jamie one more time.
Go on.
And there was a sense, I'm speculating, of course, but there was a sense that some of the film was derailed because, like, maybe if John Landis had ulterior motives and was really kind of like, I have to shove in as many people as I can, you know, that kind of makes a rise of more characters and situations than there needs to be in the film.
Right. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think perhaps it's just the nature of noir is they can be quite convoluted and have lots of elements. I don't know, but yeah, sure. Maybe there's an element of, oh, I've got to get David Bowie would vouch for me as a, he wants to work with me, even though the thing I did wrong, you know. Maybe it's just he's just trying to play. It's just didn't do as good a job as on other films of coming up with a really good story. I mean, I don't know. It would, it's weird. It's
well, a lot of his films are a bit confused and a bit flabby. Like, what? There's a couple of the mayhem sequences in the Blues Brothers where he's just endlessly crashing cars, going far too long.
Yeah, he's not one for like succinct plots that are of satisfying. It's more what would be cool in and of itself in the moment. What would be funny and entertaining? But Fast and Loose as a story maker, perhaps. American Werewolf in London, is that's pretty good film. Does anything similar there? Where like, oh, it's quite, you know, loosey goosey with the tying up things and thinking of. So I think that's a pretty solid film and entertaining.
I think that's probably my favourite film of his.
I don't know. Maybe there's some comparisons that could have been made, but I haven't watched that recently enough. Anyway, like it does work, I think. So thanks, Abby, for picking a film that wasn't too bad. Certainly, yeah, I enjoyed it again.
It's becoming a rarity.
Yeah.
Becoming a rarity has always been a rarity.
You know, it has the classic mixed tone that we love. They're not quite a success, not quite the worst movie ever. That's our bread and butter, isn't it? To look at these movies that fall in between success and failure. So yeah, that's that, I think. As we now go into the night or day, depending on what time you're listening to this.
The
I mean, win for
way you
us, it
said
is the
that,
night.
the way you said that was like how people,
Say him or her.
yeah,
Or
like,
woman.
or she, or
Or
her.
into the night or day or afternoon or sort of ambiguous dusk
Anyway,
evening.
off we
Sorry,
go.
yeah. Harumph. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.